You're listening to another episode of Open Source CXO, the podcast designed to share insights on how to excel in your business using technology, regardless of the industry. Host Robert Kehoe is a self-taught software developer who has grown to the role of CEO. Renowned for his collaborations with organizations such as Stanford University, Nelnet, and Louis Vuitton, he continually seeks new challenges to conquer in the world of tech. Accompanying him is Don Blackburn, a veteran COO with over 25 years of experience in cultivating diverse relationships and driving innovation in various technical projects. Each week, they'll be sitting down with some of the nation's foremost technology leaders to develop an open source playbook, drawing from their firsthand experiences in the field. Let's talk some tech.
Today, we're with Adam Kaler, who is CTO at Ottawa University, here in the Kansas City area, I guess.
Right. Yep.
A little bit outside the Kansas City area, but welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here and the opportunity today.
No problem. Looking forward to this conversation because I think I mentioned to you before that we haven't really had anybody from the university setting or nonprofit setting, which I guess Ottawa is a nonprofit. But I thought I'd just kind of give you the floor to kind of speak a little bit about Ottawa for those that aren't familiar and, you know, what that looks like from an IT perspective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, my name is Adam Kaler. I am CTO at OU. I've been I just passed my 8 years. So the 1st of August was my 8 year work anniversary. So we do have our original campus, which I'm at in Ottawa, Kansas, right down the road on I-35. We also have three other campus locations. So we have one up here in the metro area. So we're actually moving to our Overland Park campus to Asperia, which used to be the Sprint World headquarters.
Very nice.
So we're going through that. That's been a pretty fun process. I've done a number of like construction type projects being at OU. I'll probably get into all that stuff at some point. So we're moving there. We also have a campus outside of Milwaukee. I was just there a couple weeks ago.
No kidding.
Yeah, and then one of the biggest projects I was a part of is launching our Arizona residential campus. So we are in Surprise. We're actually right down the road from where the Royals has spring training. So,
well, that's cool.
So,
have you got to go out there?
I have, and those are a blast. I mean, there's nothing like seeing a game at the K, right? I mean, it's so much fun. But that feels like a little league field. Like everybody's right on top of it. Like you're all right there. So it's super fun. And of course, being out there in February is about the best weather you can imagine. So much better than at home. So I've been there just about 8 years. I'm primarily over the hardware side of IT. I started there as data center manager. So worked my way up and took over the help desk and kind of front end support. Mm-hmm. Doing all those things. I work in parallel to our software team. They're kind of separate from the hardware side of IT, and then also our academic tech. So basically our learning management system. So for students, they kind of manage all that and a lot of our
you guys faculty. Built all that custom. Is that why you have like a software team? No. You guys built all of it custom, or that
Great
was
question.
Actually one of my questions.
Sure.
Is like, you know, what does the makeup of the team look like? Software developers at a university, I'm very curious about.
Right. Yeah. So for the hardware side, I think I got 5 or 6 full-time folks, and then probably about 3 part-time, and then a number of graduate assistants. So one of the programs that we really kind of dove into was we borrowed the idea from athletics. So we're, first of all, a little bit of context for our residential campuses, we're very heavily athletic. So probably 90% of our students are involved in some athletic competition or program, right? So that could be football, could be basketball, volleyball, beach volleyball, esports, right? Which I think we'll probably touch on some today.
That sounds interesting. But
It's
especially
a deal,
for university. So. I'm very curious about that, but we'll get into that.
Absolutely. So how that kind of functions for us is the support of those specifically. So, but our makeup of that is, that's where I was going with that. I lost my train of thought. Sorry. So we pulled that idea from athletics is that after folks get done with their undergrad degree, they can then get their master's degree, and that tuition is actually paid for in exchange for working for the institution, typically for a skill set. So we initially had this idea of kind of redoing our help desk because it was high turnover, really couldn't get folks to kind of stay in that role. So really work to utilize the students who typically came from like a business degree or management information systems, computer science, and position those folks in a help desk role so they can really get some hands-on, real-world experience. The proof was in the pudding for us because in the first couple of years, two students left before their degree was over because they got full-time jobs on what they did. So, like, okay, well, we are really on to something here. And there's certainly a ebb and flow of that, right? So, but that's really kind of helped our staffing situation so our full-time folks can really focus on more project-driven things. When we have a full roster of folks who maybe were in computer science. So, and we're always working to kind of establish and expand that program so we can have a better skill set for students as they come into that program. So that's something that's really a lot different for us in the educational setting is we can utilize students. Now, there's a number of institutions, their whole help desk is actually for undergraduate students. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't really have the population for that right yet, so knock on wood. Yeah. Hopefully someday we do. That would be really cool. But yeah, so there's some other places that whole portion is done, and then the graduate actually do more project-based work, which would be something to be great to get to.
So are those grad assistant, technically grad assistant roles that yes. you pay for?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then they make a decent living, right? You pay them so that they can continue to take classes, and I'm guessing, oh, you give them free tuition.
Yes. Right. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of the rub, if you will, right? So okay. that's what they're getting out of it. And, you know, there's especially in the IT field, that's something that you don't see a lot of advanced degrees. So that really kind of helps set those folks apart when they go out to get a job.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, so that's primarily what our team does. Of course, lots of support, help desk tickets, making sure the Wi-Fi's up, right? That sort of thing. On the software side of the house, primarily it's really in support of our ERP. Within education in general, you have your ERP, which does a number of things, but you have your student information system, which is really kind of your core product, right? So it's going to house attendance, it's going to house grades, transcripts, registrar stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And then the ERP typically is built. Has other fringe products built around that. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to have that obviously has integrated as it can possibly be. So that team does a fair amount of custom development, but not really as much as you would see other.
So it's probably like off the shelf ERP then, or something that you guys have customized and just integrated with other products.
Well, we're migrating our ERP solution to a new one within the same vendor. The interesting part about this, at least I find this interesting, we originally implemented this back in the 1990s. Oh. It was a very open code, right? So we really had kind of full keys to the kingdom. And there's been a number of extremely talented developers come through OU over the years. And so we've really customized that source code to kind of meet the needs of the institution. Now, that is great. Until those folks leave,
right? Nobody's there, yeah.
Right? And then you go back to the provider of the solution; they really can't support us. So that kind of helped tell the story of why we kind of go for more of the off the shelf type.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Type of solution. So that, and then for our academic tech side, like I said, that's really supporting our Blackboard system, which is where folks take courses and they take tests and that sort of thing. So it's more of a specialized and focused help desk is really the formation of that. There is a reporting aspect. So there's like a low-level business intelligence. It's difficult. It's complex. But it's just not quite the focal point as other departments.
Gotcha.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. So one of the things that you and I talked about that was a little bit unique, I thought, and now that I've done a little research into it, it's not that unique, is the governance committee. Now, you've set that up. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that was a part of our strategic plan. So we have a new chancellor as of 2021, and Bill, he started a strategic planning process. And so I was lucky enough, in 21 was when I was promoted to CTO, to be a part of that at the very beginning, to help kind of formulate where the institution should go. Obviously, in a post-COVID environment, higher ed and just education in general is substantially different. So there needs to be a more focus on equity for students in terms of how they can take classes, in-person, remote learning, hybrid learning. There's all kinds of different nomenclature around that. So trying to right-size all of those portions, and then the gift giving aspect, but there was a substantial focus on the operational efficiency within the institution. So because we have all the different locations, things can become kind of a little siloed. And certainly isn't from malintent from anyone, right? It's just as you're separated geographically, those things can kind of happen from time to time. So there was a concerted effort to really appear as one institution, one university. And so I was co-chair of that. And then out of that, we decided that we really needed this tech governance process. And so really, if I had to define it, to me, technology governance is a workflow that we work through to determine what solutions that we are going to implement for the institution. So it's checkboxes. Because of that siloed nature, unfortunately, there were some things that were brought to the university and paid for, maybe didn't have the full buy-in from everyone. And this isn't just OU, this is everybody, right? Mm-hmm. This stuff happens everywhere we bought this new thing. By the way, can you integrate this portion from an API or whatever, right? Yeah. So I think that stuff really happens everywhere. But this is really a concerted effort to look at that and make sure everyone is aware of these solutions as we put those in place.
So you kind of formed it. So it is IT specific. That was going to be the other thing is you're kind of, it's a little bit broad, but mostly IT. It's mostly the software and hardware and making sure everybody's on the same page.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we certainly, the projects that come in, I'd say 90% of them so far have been software specific. Mm-hmm. You know, they have some certain function. There are some IT specific things that we work through. Right, is it compatible with our system? Do we have something that kind of works like it? Which is something as a CTO, I never really thought would be a part of my job, but internalizing technology. Evangelism, right? Which is just talking about what we have and what solutions we have. And so that's kind of the time and place. And somebody comes in something, with some kind of solution, I say, well, this is great, but we have something that gets us 80% of the way there. How can we supplement that other 20%? And that might be a custom development, right? It might be a third-party solution, not quite what they have submitted for approval, right? Mm-hmm. So now I will say We really try to have a pretty wide range of folks on this committee to really understand the full impact. Because of that, we are tech governance, but it's really kind of moving into more of a operational governance standpoint of, does this really work for us? Does this upset the apple cart for another campus?
Right. So I was going to ask, how big is this committee?
So I think we're about 12 folks.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
You're gonna try to get 12 people to agree, huh?
Seven. Seven of them, right?
Oh, okay.
Right.
Just majority rules.
Majority rules, yeah. So at the end of the day, the tech governance itself doesn't really make a decision, right? So we make a recommendation that we pass on to our chancellor, and then so there's some things that we don't really gauge on, like finances, right? But it's our job to collect that information. So we have to understand how financially this impacts the institution and then pass that stuff on in a nice little.
So one of my questions was, who brings these needs to the committee? Like who, I understand procurement's probably mm-hmm. involved in all this, obviously, but mm-hmm. who, I've always kind of wondered, okay, let's say you have a need or somebody who decides they have a need? You guys mentioned that you had a software that you're using since the 90s mm-hmm. and you're, migrating over to a new one. Who brought that need up?
Great questions. Sometimes, right? Right. So I would say our director of our software team, she's been there for 20 years plus, and so she really had her finger on the pulse of that. So I would say specifically the ERP, it was more of, especially with the strategic plan, stepping back and saying, okay, where are we at from an overall technical landscape? And that's one thing that's really improved. I feel like in just higher ed in general. I think there was a statistic I saw from EDUCAUSE the other day that prior to COVID, only about 15 to 20% of president or chancellor cabinets had technical folks on that cabinet to help kind of drive the strategic making process.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And it's how can you be, tech forward if most of the people you know, you're having recommendations by people who are technically not that technical. So
right.
It seems like a very, like you're having recommendations, what it seems like almost from anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, just a random idea. We need to do this. We need to upgrade this. And then it just becomes
right.
something that just gets presented in front of the committee then? Is that how that works?
Yeah, yeah. And so, okay. and the portion of it, so pre-COVID, it was like 15, 20%, right? Post-COVID, it's over 60%. So I, there's been a definite shift. Now this is kind of a rabbit hole, but I think the next iteration of that is information security, right? So that's going to have a place at that strategic level decision making,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
So you know, I was very pleased to see that it was. We really took a step back and said, okay, from a technical standpoint and from an operational standpoint, because to me that's kind of a fine line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Technology, operations, obviously, you guys, right?
Right, right.
so those things have to work together and kind of coexist.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think we took a look at that and said, okay, let's take a snapshot of where we are from a technology. And there was one like Visio diagram that our director of software that she put together that looked like a maze of all the different solutions that they had to integrate with.
Oh my goodness.
Oh geez.
Yeah.
I think there's something wrong here. So we also found that there were a few things like our CRM where the support contract on those was more than our ERP support contract. We went, wait a minute, this is kind of backwards, right? So needed to kind of right size and kind of bring more things in house. One thing I said to our board was it would really behoove OU to play in that sandbox. It was great for years that we can kind of customize and be different because the way the tech's moving to the cloud, right, and everything, especially mm-hmm. in the higher ed sphere, for us kind of play within those guardrails, I think would be much more helpful for us to.
Are universities different? Like I would imagine
mm-hmm.
most universities might even use the same software. Is it not true or? Do you guys have any specific unique needs that are different than any other university that you need custom software for? Or is it just a matter of people deciding, hey, I like this software better than this other software, and that's what creates the sort of custom aspect to this?
Great question. So it to me, it kind of plays into what the differences are. So to me, there's really for higher ed altogether, there's really three different buckets, right? So there are public institutions, KU, K-State, Emporia State, right? So those are funded by the state, but they're partially subsidized by the state, but then also just tuition from students, right? So then you have private schools, which are nonprofit, and that's like OU. Typically, they're backed by a church or some kind of other nonprofit entity, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have private for-profit institutions. So that's like a DeVry. Right, so
right.
folks that, and they typically hyper focus on certifications. I think Cleveland Chiropractic was, I think, a for profit for a while, but I think they went through some organizational changes here a while back. So that's really kind of the differences that we find. And so some of that stuff is going to be based about what type of solution you have. So for example, the company that we purchased our ERP software from that we're migrating from into the same company, but a different solution. they actually have one that's more right-sized for, I'll say, medical schools that are maybe doing more nurse training, right?
Okay.
That's specifically what they do. So some of that stuff is based on the individual niche inside of
that's fair.
Of higher ed.
But there's no like general education type of university platform.
Not really. I mean, there's a few
product
of the heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking earlier about like the whole idea of academic tech, right? And so how you support students. For a little while, it looked like Microsoft was going that route. So one of my old bosses at the K-12 that I used to work at actually went to work in the education sector within Microsoft. He's in Houston now, I think. But there was a substantial push to really turn Microsoft Teams and OneNote, at least it seemed to me on the outside, to turn it into a learning management system,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a number of I wouldn't say custom, they're actually add-on modules from Microsoft that link up all that information back to your SIS, so that way all the grades can post each way, and it's about these companies trying to get more into the actual ecosystem of the students because. As we learned from when we were kids, you know, we all had Macs. So mm-hmm. a lot of Apple Mac users, I think, came from playing Oregon Trail in third grade. So that's where I think a lot of that software comes from. There's a few heavy hitters. Oracle's in that space now, but that's like KU and above. So we're probably about 3,000 students. So we're not in that ecosphere, right?
Gotcha.
So
I have noticed that my daughter's been at a couple of universities. She's in grad school now, and everywhere it's been heavy Microsoft, right? You get free Microsoft Suite as a student, and you know everything from email to it's always Microsoft.
Right.
And all the way down.
Yeah, there's still a big push for Google, especially if folks came from more of the K-12. So I worked in K-12 for about 4 years. I've been in higher ed for about 8. There's certainly more Google in K-12. There's more Microsoft in higher ed. And a part of that, it feels like that I think they're prepping more for the real world, which is primarily Microsoft. Right. So
pish posh. That's true.
Boo, Microsoft, boo.
So I am very curious, though, considering that you guys don't have really custom platforms, can you give me sort of an idea of why do you need developers? What do you develop?
Sure. So the developer is that the developers we have on staff are really more about supporting the ERP function. So and it's so like right now our existing one is all Unix based. So our lead senior developer is a Unix guy, right? And so he worked at a different spot here in KC, ran a number of different Linux servers. So kind of getting that data out of there and understanding how that mechanics works is different than your typical sysadmin. At least what we found in our hiring.
So the software that you guys use store the data locally on your servers, and you guys write software to kind of extract the data, write reports, and all that. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. Right. So you're not really necessarily working with the software unless you're probably integrating that, but you probably just integrate it straight from the database perspective somewhere else if you needed to. But
right. And to me, what's really interesting about this getting into the higher ed eight or so years ago is that there are some functions that we can't customize and are actually not allowed to. So, for example, there's software from the federal government for financial aid and student loans. Mm-hmm. You have to download that software from them to pull the data out in a very certain way so everything's uniform.
Gotcha.
There was a huge mess earlier this year. I'm not sure if you guys saw that news, but the FAFSA process basically broke.
Oh.
Right? Around January, February timeframe, when folks were really starting to apply to schools, high school seniors and stuff, no one could. And so that stuff was delayed by about a month, and that caused a lot of chaos.
Wow.
So, yeah. And so that's just, there's a lot of politics that go in that are well over my head, and I'd like to keep that over my head.
Yes, absolutely.
So, for sure.
Okay.
Very familiar with the FAFSA.
And
once your kids get into the college stuff, you'll know all about FAFSA because that's
right.
That's where you live. Yeah.
Brandon, so it's an ordeal.
Yeah. One of my good friends, actually, he works for Austin Peay, and he's not a CTO level or anything over there. But one thing that I've heard him kind of talk about a little bit is it's like, oh, we made this cool product, and you know, we did all this, and we would go to these. They would actually go to some of these conventions, I guess, and kind of have other schools try and use the product or whatever. Do you guys do a lot of innovating or do you have the opportunity? And again, it could be in your different types of universities. I get that.
Right.
But I'm curious, the ability to innovate within, I guess, the university.
Right. So that's something we'd like to get to. And really, I'd like to see that be student-led. So I've mentored a couple students and taught their – so our – come back up, sorry – so I've mentored a couple students and been a part of their practicum process, which has helped them to develop some kind of software or solution. We had one that she wanted to create a room scheduling software. So we took a Raspberry Pi, put a touchscreen on there, and kind of mocked up what it would look
that's
like.
That's fun. Yeah,
right, yeah. So it's it's not super low tech, but it's certainly – we can't go to market with that, but it just gets those students thinking creatively and really combining the business aspect. So we have a pretty heavy business and management program. So really want to get folks in that modality and how that kind of creation can happen. Now I'd love to see our computer science and just tech students in general attend more hackathons, right? And get into that aspect of it. You know, we're still kind of growing
why haven't you guys done that yet? Is it just budget constraints or just logistics of it all? Or
yes. Okay. So budget, time, people, projects, right?
Gotcha. Fair enough.
Those kind of things.